I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating at Lighthouse 22 years in business and entered our ninth year of doing open line programs. You can find an archive of past topics on our publication event tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is silos, breaking them down, and prevention techniques. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. And we do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and much, much more. In fact, we have an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S. company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to the calls that we get from our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. And that's how we came up with this particular topic for today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area that you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and then we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So either send them in or write down your questions and then save them for the end. I'm very excited to introduce our guest, Paul David Walker. Paul is a very close friend, been on open line for many years. He's a visionary, cool guy, and an outstanding business individual. He's the CEO and founder of Genius Dome Partners. He works with both domestic and international companies to improve their bottom line today and for planning for the future. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has actually worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for over 30 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, Vaughn's Grocery Stores, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing, global utilities, service, and consulting organizations. Paul's the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius. By the way, if you haven't read that book, I'd recommend getting it. And his new book is phenomenal, Invent Your Future, Seven Imperatives for the 21st Century. I feel privileged to have Paul with us today. He's going to be sharing many ideas that will help you, not in the coming months, but for planning down the road. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic is Selling to Millennials, Five Must-Dos. Paul, welcome back to Open Line.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that lovely introduction. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, breaking down silos. We have this broken into three sections. The problem, how to break them down, and prevention. This is one thing to break them down, but then you want to prevent them reoccurring. And that is something that humans tend to do. We tend to work in tribes. We tend to work in groups of people that we trust. And particularly when times are hard or business is tough, people will tend to slide back into their silo, into their, you know, business tribe, whatever it is, and lose sight of the big picture, lose sight of going forward. So it's an important skill as a leader to be able to break down silos and put preventative measures in place. So let's just move to, the first slide here is, here's the problem with a silo, with a tribal group that it saps out the energy of the culture. trust erodes between people, and it slows communications. One example, when I worked with New York Life in order to make them a more of a high-performance culture, which went very well. It went from 7th-rated to 4th-rated, and their reserves went up dramatically. But the key phrase I always look for that's hurting the culture at New York Life was, no decision is too small for the executive management committee. And it took 6 months just to get on the executive management committee's agenda, and then another 6 to 12 months to make a decision. In the meantime, competitors had competitive products already launched. So this caused a lot of silos in the company because people moved into what they could control themselves. And we're not looking to the overall company health and what they could do to build the company. People tend to go into their little tribe and don't trust people outside of their tribe. So they want a place of security. They want a place they can feel like they're a member of. And in that regard, then this trust begins to erode between.
Why does that happen? Well, because companies have all these wonderful things they're saying, we're a team, rah, rah, rah. But what starts that whole process?
Well, first of all, it's a deep, innate tendency of human beings to work in and be a member of tribes. So it's a momentum that you have to fight against. Because naturally it's going to happen. You know, look at your neighborhood, your whatever. That comes first. Your family comes first. Your tribe probably next, whatever that is, whatever you identify with. So it doesn't matter what you say in terms of your communications, in terms of your, you know, values statements. It's what you do. It's what the leaders do. So the culture or the nature and structure of how people work in your company become a reflection of what the dominant leaders actually do. So if they play one group against another, like sales against operations or operations against marketing or whatever, then people are going to see that and they're going to bolster their group and start to blame others for problems. A recent client, they just lost a major client. Well, guess what? Nobody's stepping up to say, well, you know, I saw that. I saw that coming.
Right.
No, they're blaming somebody, you know. So how do you break them down? If you've got people blaming each other, not trusting each other, and it all comes from survival. It's not, people are not evil. It's just, they want to survive. And how do you survive? You make sure that your constituency and see your tribe is safe and that you're safe within the shelter of that. So, you know, breaking down these tribes is critical, and it takes continuous work. It's not something you can do overnight. It has to be something that is continuously going on, emanating from the leadership and from the grassroots. So it's real important that you begin to extinguish certain behaviors. And clearly, this next slide outlines those behaviors you've all experienced. Blaming and finger pointing, right? It's when something goes wrong, very few companies has the whole team stand up and say, you know, we missed it, we blew it. Let's look at why, what's missing. Generally, the first step is blaming other people in the company or blaming the regulators or the government or whatever. But no solutions occur from blaming. And then we were talking about the recession that's being predicted. The recession itself won't destroy your business. We're pretending not to know it's coming. We're pretending that if you just keep doing the same things you've been doing in the past, the company's going to grow. That's a kiss of death, because every industry every company has a momentum, and that momentum will not continue without leadership really not accepting the first two behaviors and the last one, wait and hope, which is literally the sinkhole of accountability. Right? And pretending not to know is, you know, my client who just lost this big account, well, geez, I had no idea they were upset. I didn't, they didn't say anything to me. It came out from left field. Okay. That's pretending not to know. That combined with wait and hope, okay, which is, it'll get better. Things will improve. Don't worry. You know, we've been in business for X amount of years. They'll see the light. You have to never accept these behaviors.
I was talking with a longtime friend, CEO, and he made an interesting comment the other day. He said, when an environment falls into the following quote, it's more important to follow the rules than to achieve results. And his thought was that when you start seeing people just following the rules and not thinking about true results, that's the kiss of death. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. You know, being a leadership consultant, people always ask me, you know, well, what are a few things that you see that leaders make assumptions and behaviors they make by mistake? You know, what are common ones? Well, there are really no common ones except basing your decisions on successful behaviors from the past. And this is really, really difficult to overcome, because here you've done something in the past in your company or in your industry and it was successful and you were rewarded financially and lauded for your success, and you're kind of pretending that if you keep repeating that, you know, the company will grow. But you know, the company, the marketplace is like a wave approaching the shore for a surfer. There is a sweet spot, but that sweet spot on the wave moves as the wave approaches the shore. And it's the same is true with companies and markets as the flow of cause and effect rolls out. The sweet spot that got you there will not keep you there. And basically, pretending not to know that is the kiss of death. And we all know, I mean, how many times in management have people say, well, the only constant is change? Well, yeah, we know that. But still, we default to these successful behaviors from the past. This is so dangerous. And of course, rules were based on those successful behaviors from the past. Now, and you just keep doing those behaviors in wait and hope. And
oh, that's
I know you've heard.
You're suggesting something very interesting. Because I'm sure most people attending today and hearing this in the future are going to assume silos being different departments. But you're suggesting that not only can that happen, and usually does happen in most organizations, but the company itself can actually put itself in a silo.
Yeah, yeah, in their own little world, yeah.
Okay, all right, thank you. Yeah. This is as we move through this program. So we're going to be addressing prevention and dealing with these things, but this is a really important concept that you just brought up.
And I run into it all the time, and it's really hard to break up old behaviors that were successful. And, you know, got to learn how to do it, right? So that's the next section is prevention.
Okay.
I think that is key. So prevention means having a clear picture on the flow of cause and effect in your marketplace and in your business, really being engaged in the flow of cause and effect in your marketplace, really being aware of these things. So that's the big picture, right? Now, if you do that successfully and you have your eye on strategies that'll draw the company to success even in a recession or at boom times, whatever, then, you know, that's the first step. You know, that's good strategies, good ability to conceive the future and then conceive a way of changing the future for your benefit. So if you can't do that as a leader, then, you know, you really shouldn't be in leadership. You should be in some kind of operational role, because it's all about looking at the flow of cause and effect, seeing what opportunities exist, imagining what could happen. It all starts with imagination. You know, Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Now, he didn't say that knowledge wasn't important. He said that imagination was more important. Why? Because knowledge is static. Imagination then enables you to conceive a possibility for the future. So you can't invent the future unless you actually create time to imagine and have an imaginative process going on in your company. So once you see, all right, this is it, this is where we go, now you have to, you know, you see it in your imagination, then intuitively you go, okay, I'm certain about this. Sure, you get input from your other team members, you get input from your team, until at some point in time the team goes, yeah, this is where we need to go in the future. And then you wrap your intention around the behaviors and actions, and that's where prevention comes. So you have a clear picture of the future, clear picture of what's going to work, but you're not stopping there. You're keeping your eye on the flow of cause and effect in the market. You're constantly looking at it, keeping your eye on it. But then, you know, as we point out in the next slide, one, you've got to create ownership for the big team, for the business, for the company, even the market you're in, right? You have to have people see. You can't create what you can't conceive. If you read my book, Invent Your Future, you'll hear that over and over again. You can't create what you can't conceive. So in order for your team to have ownership of that big picture, you have to be able to paint this compelling picture that people become committed to. They can see it. They see the possibility for them, for the business, for them, for their families, for, you know, going forward. Yeah, I see this. This is really going to, this is going to change our business. It's going to make our business strong. And then you have to take, and you know, General McChrystal wrote a book called Team of Teams, right, which explained their anti-insurgency process in Iraq and how he had to have common mission and purpose and how he had to have both flexibility and speed. And every team needs to be a team of teams. So you need to build teamwork not only with the different departments, different aspects of your business, but between the teams. You need teams that are, you know, committed to that big picture, committed to the vision going forward, and then committed to each other's success, not just within the teams, but across the company. So sales is committed to operational success. Operational success is committed to doing things that work for sales. Marketing is looking at opportunities in the marketplace, but communicating and developing those opportunities in collaboration with operations, in collaboration with sales, in collaboration with supply chain, right? Because the, you know, the outcomes that you come up with in a strategy have to be right, but they also have to be doable. by all the teams in your company. And if the teams are fighting with each other, then you just don't have a chance at all. But if you're continuing to build this commitment to each other, commitment to each other's success within teams, commitment to each other's success within the silos, commitment to each other in terms of the executive team and the CEO. And that commitment doesn't always look like flowers and roses. You know, sometimes you have to say, you know, what you're doing is completely off target here. It's not bringing our company forward. So, but when you have that kind of commitment between silos and teams, it's really hard to get off course because someone's going to speak up because they feel safe. They're motivated to be part of the bigger picture. They're motivated to be part of something greater than themselves, which is as tribalism is primal, but so is being part of something greater than yourself. And if your company and your, go ahead.
Oh, a question just came in. Where does a company start to, so the question is around where do you start, and also people might go, yeah, been there, done that, hear that, yeah, it all goes back to, always goes back to where it was before, so why do we bother?
Yeah, well, that's blaming and finger pointing.
Right.
That's the first thing you do. That's the first thing you do is you go back and say, hey, you know, get off it. Maybe it'll go back, but why? It won't go back if we keep focused on our team, focused on each other, focused on the business, right? It won't go back. And the worst thing you can do is post a set of, you know, values on the wall and have nobody live it. Because people do what dominant leaders do. A corporate culture is simply stated how we do things around here. And if we do things with ownership for the big team, for the big goal, ownership for my team and all other teams and commitment to each other, if that's the motivation, I'm telling you, and they get that it's real, and it's not easy to create, it takes time. But once you get there, just amazing things begin to happen. It's pretty amazing. I have a few teams that are just like, they're just cooking. They don't really need me anymore, but, you know, they like me around, so.
and you know the difference because there's a flow when it is cooking and it's just a flow. And when the flow's not there, it becomes divisive.
Comes to device. People move back into their little tribe. They go back. Safe there. Right? It's not safe to be looking at the big picture. It's not safe to be committed to each other. And when they're not cooking, then they go back into those blaming behaviors, finger pointing, pretending not to know, you know. It's not my job. No. And that sucks the energy. Whereas having people motivated and committed and owning their own behaviors and owning solutions and taking actions that lead towards success. That's also primal. People want to be part of something greater than themselves. People want to feel success. They want to feel like they're part of success. One of my clients who I'm coaching in a succession process, you know, this is his natural way of doing things. You know, he sees possibilities. He's always, if things are not moving, he sees possibilities. He organizes and inspires teams to work on solutions to those possibilities. And he just naturally takes actions. And here's the lesson from that. You say, well, wow, you know. In working with him, he figured out that these are his essential, natural, God-given traits, natural genius. And he goes, that's how I do things. I had him tell a bunch of stories about when he was highly successful. What did he do? We kind of boil it down to these three things. He goes, yeah. And he looks at me now, looked up at me and said, well, is this going to work for me as the leader of this company? I said, yes, this is what great leaders do. And he goes, really? I mean, he was like, really? He didn't know what he didn't know. And, you know, so I've been working with him. Just do these things. You do it naturally. When a problem comes up, when an opportunity comes up, when you're sort of interviewing for that leadership position that you're trying to develop, come from this. This is who you are. You don't have to practice. You don't have to rehearse to be yourself, but you really have to practice to know who you are. So you get people who are able to do that, who are able to, those are leaders. I mean, not everybody can do that. And so they really shouldn't be in a leadership role. Right? And then as you do that, it becomes, there's a tipping point in the culture where these behaviors become embedded, solution-focused behaviors, taking action, looking at the future, building commitment to each other. They just become part of the culture. Now, in this slide, we talk about organizational values and desired behaviors. So you have to really define that at every level of the company. What does that mean in operations? What does that mean in sales? What does it mean in marketing? What does it mean in business planning? Right? What does it mean for the CEO? So you've got to define that, because just like an example I gave you, people don't realize the know-how part of it. They don't know how. Once you've defined, yeah, this is going to work this way, this really works, these are the behaviors that work, then you have to create a clear picture of what those behaviors look like and what the outcome is likely to be. And now, this third bullet point is the single most important for embedding these behaviors in your culture. Success stories. When you have success, you want to tell short, no more than 3 minutes, stories dissecting the success, why it was important, tie it into your desired behaviors, your organizational values, and acknowledge people for success. Do not beat them up when they fail. Because if you beat people up, they're going to go into fight or flight or freeze, which will take them right back into their little tribe for safety and acknowledgement and support. It wasn't my fault, marketing's fault, right? And you know what? It's been proven over the years that positive reinforcement works a lot better than negative reinforcement. Simple story, you may have heard this one, but I always ask my clients when they're on this topic, is you know how they train killer whales to jump up out of the water, you know, 10, 15 feet? No. So clearly negative reinforcement would be dangerous with a killer whale. Right? You swallow you whole. Well, okay. So what they do is they put a rope about half the depth of the pool and they watch the killer whale, and it swims under the rope, no fish. Swims over the rope, gets fish. Over time, the whale gets it. Okay, swim over the rope, I get fish. Okay, I get fish. Then you start raising the rope to your three quarters, then to the surface. Then they start jumping over. Then you pull it up 10 feet and they go. You got a killer whale who jumps 10 feet in the air on demand. Now, people are not animals, but it just illustrates. People are motivated by success. And if you don't acknowledge their success and tie those successes with your stated organizational values and desired behaviors, because let's say a value like teamwork might look different at every level of the organization. So what are those behaviors that lead to teamwork that we expect on the manufacturing floor or in the warehouse? What does teamwork look like in the warehouse? What does teamwork look like with the management teams? people don't know. They don't purposely not act as team players. They just don't know what it looks like. Teamwork's a very vague word. You need to describe what it looks like and then motivate people to. If we do these behaviors, we're gonna win all the time. And when we don't win, we're going to look at why we didn't win and we're going to take corrective actions. And then the silos, people will not jump into the safety zone of their particular silo. And you'll have a team of people in a company that, you know, knocks it out of the park on a regular basis.
So, Paul, let's say the CEO or head of operations, they put the values in place, paint the picture, and then people just aren't budging. They're saying yes. They think it's a cool idea. They agree, but something's still stuck.
Right. So it could be a number of things, right? One, which I would say is most often the case, is they don't know how to do this. They've never operated on a high-performance team. They just don't know how. They don't know what they're supposed to do that, right? Two is there's a level of fear associated with buying into the new values, the new way. And three, if the CEO and the executive team are not living examples of those values, people are not going to buy it. The worst thing you can do is put up organizational values and desired behaviors to bring your teams together and then display behaviors that are inconsistent with that. You'd be better off just not to say anything. You'd be better off just to go ahead and, you know, run the company the way you want to run the company and forget about teamwork and then put something up that you're not up to living. And I found, you know, when I get involved with this, the first thing I say to the senior team, now, before you put these values up, let's talk about how you're going to lead from those. Because if you're not leading from those, if you're not skilled at leading from these, you know, teamwork values, it's not going to work. So we don't want to roll these out until you're perfect as a team, but until you get your accountability in terms of the way you lead the company, until you have some know-how involved in how to lead the company. Otherwise, you might as well just take the plaque down and forget about it.
So, Paul, before we conclude this section of our program, we're going to summarize, and then I'm going to turn the recording feature off, and then we're going to open up the line for any questions. If there are a couple of bullet points for breaking silos down, prevention techniques, what would those bullet points be, Paul?
One, building ownership for something greater than yourself, which can be the company mission, can be the fact that, you know, what's greater than yourself is all the people that work in this company are making a living. Families are being fed because we're working together as a team. It doesn't have to be, you know, if you're selling poison, right? It's hard to get people motivated in the big picture for selling poison, right?
Right.
But everybody has a job. Everybody's making a living. You can get people motivated around creating that kind of team. Two, it's being in a winning environment where you feel safe, where people are committed to each other. That in itself, no matter what you're producing, is priceless. How many environments do people have in their life where they can look around the room, people involved, they can count on people to be committed to them? Not many. Not many. That alone is the key. And then three, you've got to reinforce, you know, your expectations and make them clear by your example.
That's perfect. Wow. Thank you so much, and thank you for everyone attending today. If you want to sign up for our next program, it'll be next month. It's Selling to Millennials, 5 Musts. I want to thank Paul for being on our program again. You always provide such valuable ideas and insights, and you open my mind up to looking at not only as can there be silos in a department in departments, but also the company could be siloed from the marketplace, which would not be a good thing for planning ahead and having that vision. I'm going to turn the recording feature off in just a second here, and then we're going to come back and open the line up for everyone in case you have questions you want to talk directly with Paul. But again, thank you so much. Happy holidays to everybody. Thank you for attending another open line program. See you next month. Have a great holiday season. We do have this program in December, and please stand by. I'll be right back in about 10 seconds.